Hiring isn't just about finding someone willing to take the job. You need the right person with the right background who can move your business forward. If you want candidates who truly match what you're looking for, trust Indeed Sponsored Jobs. With Indeed Sponsored Jobs, your post stands out to quality candidates who actually fit the role. According to Indeed data, 90% are more likely to be hired and trusted by 1.6 million companies. Spend more time interviewing candidates who check all your boxes. Less stress, less time, more results now with Indeed Sponsored Jobs. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to help get your job the premium status it deserves at Indeed.com/arts. Just go to Indeed.com/arts right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/arts. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Do it the right way with Indeed.
Welcome to The Continued Silence with me, Emma-Jane Taylor, here on UK Health Radio. The Continued Silence is focused on the very uncomfortable conversation of child sexual abuse and the importance of talking openly about this subject to try and normalise this conversation. Child sexual abuse is real. It affects millions of people, young and old, across the world. The work we do is very much engaging more lateral thought processes on this terrible crime, supporting survivors, protecting children, and of course, helping those not wanting to listen. Joining me each show is my resident panel, therapist Denny Corvey, activist Chris Tuck, and usually Michael Bortom, our resident poet, but Michael will be back hopefully in the next programme we record. Each week we are joined by guests from around the world to share more insights on this crippling conversation and to help us share more important messages. This show, we are really thrilled to be joined by Wendy Keir. We're going to be looking at trauma in child sexual abuse. And of course, you know, just even that word, I think, is huge in itself. So without further ado, I'm going to welcome Denny to the show. And that will be my first question to Denny. And never an easy one. What is trauma? Welcome to the show, Denny.
Thanks, CJ. It's nice to be here again. Nice to be around everybody. What is trauma? I think this is the biggest topic that we've covered so far because it's a name, it's an identity, it's a word that is used across the board and everyone kind of hears it out there. So what is trauma? So trauma results from an event or a sense of events or even a set of circumstances that is experienced by an individual as harmful or life-threatening. I think for me, the important thing is that whilst this is unique to the individual, and what I mean by that, and it's really important, I feel that each individual will see and feel and experience through their own experiential lens of the world. So this may differ for many. And the key here is if the individual feels threatened or harmed by a person or an event or discrimination, then that can result in trauma. And I think within that, we also have to consider the cultural considerations that go around that, the historical and current situations of where they are in the world, the discriminations, stereotypes, biases, gender identity, sexual orientation, age, religion, race, and ethnicity. It's all part of a person's individual experience. So whilst I've just said it's unique to the individual, trauma causes, we know, adverse effects that limit the ability to function and achieve mentally, physically, socially, emotionally, and spiritually. And we know that CSA trauma delays and severs and impacts the cortical and subcortical regions of the brain, which contributes to the various cognitive, behavioural, psychological and physical health outcomes later in life. So it's huge and it's vast. And so I'm, as always, looking forward to the discussion today.
Thank you, Denny. Yeah, I mean, you know, trauma is a little word with so much in it. I think that's the easiest way for me to explain that. It's a little word full of everything. And what I took from that, just in two words, it's what limits a person, and everybody is going to be very different with that. Trauma affects everybody, all of us in here in this room today, and around the world affects everybody differently. And I guess that's where there has to be this non-judgmental approach on people who are going through trauma, because not one size fits all. I think that's what we were saying off air earlier, Denny. You know, everyone has a different story, don't they?
I think that's really important, because I think that gets a little bit lost. We're all passionate about supporting, getting the word out there, and quite rightly so. But I feel also very passionately about that one size fitting all is not a workable model. We'll all have our own pathway that we take in order to heal. It won't all look the same, and we need to keep an open mind, and we need to hear stories. Wendy, I mean, you know, the books that you're doing is fantastic, because it's about hearing stories, and it's about opening our minds to the fact that one approach doesn't fit all. And in the world of therapy, there's going to be therapists, modalities that are wonderful for some people within trauma, but don't work for others. And I think there's a place for everyone.
And that's really important for us to, and that's really important for us to hear. There is a place for everyone. Look, I'm going to come to our guest. We've got Chris Tuck, who's here, is the activist today. So I'm going to come to our guest first, and then we're going to open out the conversation. So, Wendy, welcome to today's show on the Continued Silence here on UK Health Radio. It's so great to see you. Tell our listeners where you're living.
Thanks, Emma. Thanks for having me. Yeah, so I live on a little island called Ko Chang in the Gulf of Thailand, next to the border of Cambodia. It is a tropical paradise, but at the moment it is so hot. Sorry, I know.
I'd be happy to swap out for hot and tropical. Really, just those hot. Two words definitely align with my head and my heart. And I've seen you on social media and your posts, and I follow you quite a lot now, because you are dreamy to me in your little world over there.
That's nice. Thank you.
And it's so important, I guess, for some of the stuff that we're doing, to be in a good environment. So, you know, welcome to the show, Wendy. Let's hear a little bit about Wendy.
Yeah, so I think I mentioned this on the last time that we spoke, and it's, you know, trauma doesn't need to define who you are. You can really, it's up to you, but the trick is recognizing that you're experiencing trauma, and that's the hard bit, I think. About me, I do an online conference every year called Take a Stand Against Abuse. Chris was involved in it last year. I've also written my own story about being in the UK care system for 14 years. And also I help women to write their stories of abuse to get them out there, so people can hear different perspectives, get different insights, because every story is so unique and so different. And what impacts one person doesn't necessarily impact another, but it's, yeah. So that's a little bit about me.
Thank you, Wendy. Well, welcome to today's show, and thank you for sharing that with us. Does it help living in a tropical hot country when you do the work that you're doing?
Yes, I'm not emotionally triggered as much as I am back home, because there's fewer people. So I'm able to manage the effects of trauma more easily, because I don't get triggered as much as I do back in the UK, which is interesting.
You can see, I feel a pile onto the tropics now for us all. I'll be buying my ticket after this to go out there. And I think it's, you know, when I look at your posts, and, you know, those of you who follow me on social media know that, you know, those are the kind of things I know that I really need, because I find them so calming and empowering to see, like, the heat and the sun. And I think, you know, just talking about trauma, you know, going through any kind of trauma, I think, you know, and I can only speak for myself here, those are the beautiful things around me that help me stand in my shoes today, by keeping me remembering the beauty around us as well, because that's so important. Lots of nodding heads. Let's come to Chris Tuck now. Chris, our activist here on the Continued Silence UK Health Radio. Chris, trauma, the tropics, the heat, the sun. I mean, you've been away recently. This conversation is, as we know, as Denny has already outlined, is very huge.
It is massive. And the word trauma for me means a normal response to abnormal events that we've been through throughout our lifetime. And in the context of child sexual abuse, it's having the crimes of sexual assault and rape done against us. So knowing that it's normal, having that normal response, whatever that response is for us as individuals, is just so empowering, because with that piece of information, you know that there's nothing abnormal about you. And we often feel that when we've gone through some kind of abuse and we're dealing with that impact of those abuses mentally, physically, however we do respond and have that impact on us. So when I share that with individuals that I work with, for example, if it's even a social media campaign or if it's victim and survivors, often they don't know that what they've gone through is abuse in the first place. Often they do not know that the symptoms that they are dealing with on a day-to-day basis is a normal response, a natural response to the trauma, to the abuse that they've gone through. So there's a lot of education and a lot of awareness just in that, that is really freeing and is really powerful to anyone that's gone through some kind of trauma from abuse. Yeah, that's all I want to say at the moment, because there's quite a lot in that.
There's a lot in that. And I think, you know, as you're saying stuff, I'm writing stuff down, I'm having a little look around. And, you know, trauma, you know, if we look at what Wendy says here, she says, you can learn to break trauma's grip and live an emotionally healthy life on your terms. Now, I don't know about you girls, but living life on my terms has probably only come in the last 5 years. And I'm 50. And I didn't really know what that meant until the last 5 years, because as you're healing, and like I say, I'm speaking for myself here, as you're healing and you're going on your journey, and I'm going to come to Denny for this, as you're going on your journey, you're healing. I didn't realize I could live life on my terms, because you're just trying to get another day, another day, another day. And you've got, you know, you've got things going on around you with work, with personal life, and then suddenly it was like a switch had gone on, and I was like, oh, it is my life. I can live my life. I can live it my way, and feel comfortable with it. And then when I changed that sort of conversation in my head, Denny, that was when I really felt much more empowered. And that, like I say, that was only five or 6 years ago, so relatively new. But maybe an important part of this conversation, for helping people to develop and heal.
Yeah, sure. Chris, you're right, there was an awful lot in that. I was scribbling away there. But I think the first thing I want to pick up on is that, you know, we operate from a subconscious pattern of life script. So when you think that, you often hear, don't you, how come you didn't say anything at the time? Well, that's the norm. That's our known. That's our unit. And it's not often until we step outside of that that we start to be curious, question. And then we're still within that unit. So it's very, very difficult to become consciously aware of our set of trauma symptoms when we're still within it. So that's the first thing. And I think it's really interesting what you said, Emma Jane, about living my life. I think it's a wonderful place to be, but it's also a long pathway for many. It also does need to be acknowledged that there's often loss in that. So as we begin to lead our own lives and we begin to learn how to place boundaries and we begin to learn how to be more assertive and compassionate with ourselves, we often find that the flip side to that is there's loss. We have to say goodbye to the toxic in our life. And that's an incredibly, I mean, I equate that to almost a sense of grief. No matter what you're thinking about that person that you're losing, you're choosing to stay away from, there's a whole load of grief wrapped up in that as well. So I hear what you're saying. And Wendy, I totally agree that trauma doesn't need to define who we are. But I'd like to acknowledge that that's not always an easy path when it takes a huge amount of courage.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks, Denny. Goodbye to toxic. Wow, that was powerful, wasn't it? And who knew that that was an important part of our development? And I dare say, everybody in life that would relate to, regardless of what you've gone through, there are people out there who are, want of a better word, toxic, and they are not helping our situation. And so, you know, whoever you are, whatever your story, and obviously we are aligned to child sexual abuse here on the Continued Silence, we don't need that around us. Say goodbye to toxic. I mean, it sounds brilliantly easy, but of course we know how hard it is, because toxic also comes with love, doesn't it, Denny? And that, you know, and yeah, that's the difficulty.
Yeah, absolutely. I've just written down, in order to say goodbye to toxic, we have to acknowledge and know it's toxic.
Yes.
And, you know, for many trauma, you know, people who are experiencing trauma, have experienced trauma, are living with the effects of trauma. Again, we subconsciously often keep ourselves around what we know. So we tend to seek out, we tend to move towards, albeit something that's not healthy, but it's something that we have mapped in our brain. It's our memory map of what we know. We often say that no matter what the home is, whether it's good or bad, we will seek home. And so in order for us to remove ourselves from anything or anyone around us that's toxic, we need to have done a little bit of work around our own awareness of self and what it is that we want to look different in our life. And only then do we uncover probably the situations or the people that are no longer serving us a purpose.
And going on from that, Denny, it's not, and I've spoken about this before, it's not until you step outside of your own environment, whatever that looks like, and you experience different, that you've got something to compare with and work with. So when I knew personally that my home was toxic because I experienced love and nurture in my friend's family home, did I start to question what was going on and start to know that I wanted different? And then I went to find different. And for me as well, I just wanted to explain, my mum was in a domestic violence relationship, and no matter how hard I tried to show her different, she felt safe in the toxic than wanting to find and experience something that was healthy and something that was different. So it really is not as simple as we all want it to be. It's very complex.
And then, of course, trauma bonding, which is really what we're talking about here, is a thing. I know there's lots of conversations about this online, and people don't believe it's a thing, but I 100% do believe it's a thing. And so if anyone's listening who doesn't agree with me, feel free to tweet me about it. I'll happily chat it through with you, because trauma bonding is a thing. Would you agree, Denny?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think trauma bonding for me is around those real surface levels of attachment, love and intimacy that actually come as a result of abuse and the abuse cycle. And I think for many young people who are sexually abused within their family home, there's the confusion, the complexity, because it's not always around a horrific rape, which the media and people lead us to still believe is where most of child sexual abuse comes from. It's often, as we know in many shows, we've discussed this, within the family, siblings, and there's attachment and intimacy and love. And sometimes within that abuse, there's aspects of that person that does give love in a different way. So, I definitely believe that trauma bonds exist and greater impact. That's clumsy. That's the wrong word. Have a more confusing impact on child sexual abuse survivors who have experienced this within the home.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't know, as obviously as a young person, what trauma bonding was until I started my healing. And it wasn't actually till later on in my own therapy that I understood what trauma bonding was. And trauma and bonding together are just, for me, just two words that don't really work. But it, obviously, in this instance, they do, because I always feel like bonding is a nice thing. but it isn't. And so when I realized what trauma bonding actually meant, I actually found that quite triggering and stressful. Denny, I found that whole process of but also feeling like I was complicit, and of course I wasn't. And that's how the trauma bonding works. And I was just a child. So, you know, I think it's a really important part of this conversation, Denny.
Yeah, definitely. And it really then opens up another layer, doesn't it, around, you know, attachment and our attachment styles, because they are hugely significant in how we communicate with the world, how we see ourselves, and how we then go on to operate within the world. And if we're in a trauma bond where, you know, as children, we think that there's true love, safety, connection, and yet that's also embedded within harm, then subconsciously, we're probably going to operate, even as adults, our inner children will come through with that attachment style. And that's where the work lies. You know, again, it's about bringing a subconscious pattern of intimacy and attachment into our conscious, so that we can work out what it is that we need to adapt and change ourselves first. And like I said before, that often means letting go of a really significant person in your life that has also given some form of love and care alongside the harm. It's really, really, it's a big, big loss for many.
It's a very deep. And thank you very much. Look, we're going to take a short break on that note. Please don't go anywhere, and we will be back after this.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show. Wendy, I'm going to come to you because one of the things you are doing is you have created the trauma recovery method.
I have.
This is something that you use to manage your own emotions, but also your clients' emotions. So if you're happy to share that secret ingredient with us, and UK Health Radio's listeners, we'd love to hear it. We won't tell anyone.
I basically woke up to realizing that I'd experienced trauma. It took a long time, you know, 45 years for me to actually think, oh my God, I've actually been through something horrific. In the past, I'd had lots of therapy, I'd had different interventions, but nothing really seemed to work. So what I did was I started to read books, learn, and then I put the best bits that I used from that methodology into a process that I could use step by step to help me to break the cycle. But you know what? I think the golden nugget is for me, is about the individual's readiness to work through what they've experienced. For me personally, I came up against an awful lot of resistance. You know, I didn't want to look at it. I would close down. It was hard for me to deal with. It took me a long time to actually put it into methodology, because there was still that level of resistance that trauma creates, because it doesn't want you to look at anything that's going to be painful or harmful. So I wrote a book called Be More Wolf, A Survivor's Story, Breaking the Trauma Cycle. And in there, I lay out the different steps that I went through. I can't remember them all off the top of my head. That's rather embarrassing, because there's quite a few. I'm just looking at the book now. There are seven steps.
Whilst you just collect your thoughts around all of that, come back in a moment. But I just found it really interesting on what you said about being ready to face what's going on for you. I work with survivors, there's often some anger there because they don't want to work through stuff. Why do I have, I've gone through all of this. Why do I now? Why is it on me to sort out my life? Why can't my life just be easy? And why can't I just get on with my life? But often because all of that is there, you literally just can't because you're stuck in the stuff. So what you're sharing now through your book, I'm hoping you've remembered your steps now.
I was too busy listening to you, sorry.
What you can share with us now may just help some people understand that actually, if they are stuck in their life, until they deal with it, they're stuck because no one else can get them unstuck. They have to do the work, unfortunately.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I say in the book is that asking for help is part of the trauma recovery healing journey. Allowing yourself to actually ask for help and to be able to receive it is a really big step, because when you've been through something horrific, it's so hard to trust. But I sort of came to the conclusion in my head that everything that I'd been taught, everything that I believed was wrong. Somehow that just, and then I started to question everything I thought, everything I did. And my biggest thing was journaling. I would journal out, why do I think this way? What's created it? That was the start of my healing process, was actually having an honest conversation with myself.
Yourself what you needed and giving yourself back what you needed. Yeah.
So I would muffle myself. So I would have two different characters. I'd have me as the young woman who's experienced trauma, or the child, and then me as the adult or my highest self, the very best version of myself. And I journal between the two. So my adult self, my higher self, the very best version of me, would ask me as a child what was going on, what was happening. And then I would come back in as an adult and rescue the child. So I started there at that position. And I talk a lot about that as part of the healing process for me personally.
So you're stepping into your child life as your adult, and you are almost bringing your inner child and your adult self to a place of balance and peace.
Yeah.
Which makes perfect sense to me. What about you, Demi? Yeah. Does that make sense for you?
Yeah, I mean, what we're talking there is inner child work, isn't it? And unless we show our inner child compassion, which is incredibly hard to do, because Wendy, when you said about readiness to work through what we've experienced or a person is experienced, I kind of wrote down, it really hit a nerve that clients who come to me, and I've experienced this myself, often by the time a crisis has happened or life is completely not working for them, there's already a set narrative about ourselves as people, that we are to blame, that there's something deficient with us, that we're an abominable person, we keep repeating patterns in life. And that's really, I think in many ways, the first step clients have to go through is exactly what you've just described, which is, how does little Emma Jane get cuddled and loved and almost reparented? Because if without that, we can't step into those shoes of that little child who was being abused. And years and years have gone by where we've often been seen as the troublesome one in the family. We are the scapegoat of the family. And that massively taps into our identity of self, which then comes into the other layer of shame. And when we feel shame, there's very little compassion. So we're far more likely to repeat the patterns that in many ways kept us alive, but no longer serve a purpose. So it's really, really complex. But inner child work, I think, is incredibly difficult. Again, it all takes courage. It does mean going back into a place that we're often quite rightly very frightened to. But I think the message and the safe space that I try to provide for clients is there is beauty in that. We can change it. We can move forward.
Well, look, and moving forward, we must, because the show is rattling on. And one of the things I do want to speak about now are the different types of trauma. So, you know, there are three types of trauma, but it's understanding which trauma, if you're going to scientifically and medically look at this, fits a survivor victim of child sex abuse, or is it all three of them? So, Denny, you know, the different types of trauma, we've got acute, we've got chronic, we've got complex. Now, I would always have said complex trauma is associated to child sex abuse survivors. And I just was really interested in your take on that, really.
Yeah, sure. I mean, if I'm really honest, I think that I personally am not sure whether they're very often standalone. I think it's like many things that there's an overlap, and you know, an acute trauma is defined as a single incident. Well, yes, of course, there may well be many survivors out there where just had a single incident. And I said just then, again, clumsy, it doesn't minimize it. It's trauma, it's an event that's happened. And I think for me, if when we separate this, I think we have to be mindful that we don't put a hierarchy to it.
Yeah.
So chronic trauma is defined as repeated and prolonged. Well, yes, that happens in child sexual abuse. And then complex trauma is exposure to varied and multiple events. Again, you know, we distinguish it. There are three different types. You'll see it in literature. But for me, trauma's trauma. And I really quite personally step away from kind of that identification of it, because like I say, it crosses over. And I think it does make many clients minimize their experience by, you know, sitting in front of me sometimes and go, oh, but it was just this one occasion, or it was this one person. Yes. And I'd like to steer away from that.
Whatever. And I hear that all the time, Denny. You know, that just what you just said, you know, I'm sorry, I cut through the last statement there. But, you know, it happened to me once. It happened to me just, you know, and it once is enough. I mean, I say that 1,000 times on this show and on my own work on social media. Once is enough, and the trauma will be reflective on you as what's happened to you and you as a person. And like simply, you know, what then limits the person because of what's happened to them, Denny?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, again, two people could go through a very, you know, within a family, a very, very similar experience, yet will come out of it with a different view of it, a different sense of it, an experiential difference in how they experienced it. And that's often what clients are faced with. We're often faced with that friend, family member who can't tolerate the emotions that go along with some of the symptoms of trauma. So come on, isn't it time that you got over it? It only happened once, or I was in that family too. It's quite damning, and it's a statement that often keeps the silence going for many people around child sexual abuse.
Chris, let's bring Chris in there on this conversation. The different types of trauma and labelling, and, you know, trauma is trauma, right?
Yeah, it is. And I think the labelling for some helps them, especially when it comes to their recovery. If they have a diagnosis, they feel safe with that diagnosis and it gives them something to work with. But for others, a diagnosis, a label is crippling. I like to think that we can all recover on our journey from trauma, and that recovery is going to look different for each and every one of us. And some of us, it might appear we've got our lives together and all areas of our lives are brilliant. However, I know from personal experience and from what others have told me, there's an impact in some area of our life, and it will move and change and shift depending on what's going on for us. And then for others, like Denny was saying, two people from the same family can experience similar abuse, but they can be, one can be seen to be really growing and not so impacted, and another sibling, for example, could look like they're actually stuck and really damaged, in inverted commas, by the abuse. Not one way or one response is better or worse than the other. There is just different impact. And yes, I think we really need to acknowledge that. And hopefully, if there are siblings listening to this, that there is no hierarchy, there is no kind of comparison, because there just should not be.
Thank you, Chris. And actually, one word that sort of resonated with me there is recover. And, you know, this is something that I think probably is a show in itself. You know, over the years of, I would say, healing, I used to say, you know, going back to recovery, going back to healing. But actually, it was for me, I think I soon realized it was more about healing for me, because recovering back to normal, because the recovery is to bring back to normal or position or condition, it wasn't about that. It was going back to be the best me through a healing process. So it was just interesting, you sort of, you saying that, and I guess again the huge lateral conversations attached to trauma, and this conversation. So you know, it would just kind of got me thinking there, actually, you know, maybe it's recovery. Well, for me anyway, maybe it wasn't so much recovery. It was healing that I needed to do, Chris. It was healing that I needed to, because what was I recovering from? I mean, you know, as children, you don't really know what that adult's going to look like. And as adults, we don't really know what that child was going to end up being or doing. So yeah, it's about understanding what that looked like. And actually, it wasn't going back to any normal, because I don't know what that normal was, or, you know, or we don't know, right? I mean, survivors won't know what that normal is, but to heal, to be the best you today, living in Thailand, tropical worlds, or London, or wherever it is, what does that healing process look like?
Yeah, exactly. And I think that that healing is like, some people need to be shown that there is just more to life than what they're actually now stuck with or stuck within. So when you say to people, well, what do you want from your life? What do you want your life to look like? Sometimes that can be really freeing and empowering for some, but really others really struggle with that. So it's almost like there needs to be like a rebirth, like this is what life could look like. What do you want? What do you feel comfortable with? And moving the people towards what it is, the best version of them, the best life for them. What does that look like? And it is, it's the words that are really tangible, that you will use one word with someone and a different word with someone else. So yes, it is what is it that is good for the person in their journey of healing, recovery, whatever it is you want to resonate with.
Wendy, you've got your hand up there.
Sorry, I don't feel I did a very good job when you asked me the question about the trauma recovery method. Ultimately, there are four pillars. So the first pillar is about the relationship with yourself. That's where it all starts. When you can move into the position of learning to connect and understand the traumatized side of your personality, because sometimes it's all consuming and sometimes it's not. You know, sometimes you're feeling it and sometimes you're not. So that's the first pillar. It's about the relationship with self. The second pillar is about conscious attention and putting your behavior and your thoughts and how you do things under the microscope. So you're becoming consciously aware of what you're doing, so you can start to learn to take responsibility for your actions. The third pillar is about connecting the dots. And this is to help you to understand why you behave the way that you do, and to release the energy of the trauma it is that you've experienced. The fourth pillar is about being aware of all of that and being able to take inspired action, being able to think, actually, I want to do something different. I'm going to try and do something different. I'm going to try and think something different and take a different action that takes you away from that traumatized side of your personality. So those are the four pillars. Thank you for allowing me to come back in and explain them better. Like,
thank you. Denny, did you have your hand up?
I did. I was listening to that, Wendy, and kind of what was going through my brain was when we kind of know that the first thing to be damaged by early years trauma is our sensory needs and our sense of smell, touch, hypersensitivity around that. I think it clicks into a little bit of the term recovery. For me, it's about acceptance, awareness, and an okayness around the soothing we need. That's kind of, for me, where well-being sits, really. And I think we can't not acknowledge that in order for us to psychologically move towards a better place, we also have to acknowledge that physiologically our bodies take a while to catch up. So in terms of we can be in therapy for 3, 4, 5 years, for however long, and we're trying to make connections, exactly what you've just said, Wendy, around our conscious attention and moving into a cognitive place, our bodies still, at the sound of something, can go into that very trauma place. For me, it was church bells. Don't need to explain any more than that. The minute I heard church bells, 8 years into therapy, bang, I'm right back to where that kind of trauma response is. So for me, it's about learning how to self-soothe in those moments of dysregulation and looking at how can we increase our window of tolerance to unpredictability? Because in those moments, you don't know where they're going to happen. You don't know where you're going to smell that smell. Could be perfume, smoke, could be anything that physiologically, no matter how much psychological work you've done, places you in that place of trauma again. So for me, it's about being aware and accepting that that might not necessarily ever leave you. They might always be those points of a trauma response for you, but learning how to soothe yourself in that moment so that we don't go into that response, which is fight, flight, fawn, where the people pleasing, because that's where you need to stay safe by pleasing other people. So goodness. We've got another program there, haven't we?
I know. It just goes on and on and on, doesn't it? There's just so many different threads to these conversations. But look, we're going to take a break now. Last one of today's show. But please don't go anywhere, because we will be back after this.
UK Health Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Radio.
The station that makes you feel good.
Okay, welcome back to today's show, The Continued Silence, with me, Emma Jane Taylor, here on UK Health Radio. Okay, I want to come to Wendy now. Wendy, you were institutionalized in the UK care system. A survivor of childhood abandonment, neglect, emotional, sexual abuse, and you have also experienced dyslexia, discrimination, lots of things in
just the icing on the cake there, just the icing on the cake, yeah.
And one of the things that you have sort of gone on to say is, and I guess this is because of your own background, 25% of young people who were in care have ended up in prison. Why is that? I mean, have you got any ideas or research to understand that question?
So from working within police custody, working in with social services, and it's something that Denise said earlier on, is that we act out our experiences that we don't know whether they're good experiences or bad experiences. And that often puts us back into situations where we put ourselves back at risk. That level of risk, as you get older, comes with a consequence. And a lot of the time that consequence is moving into the, I'm trying to think of a word of how to describe it, but moving into the legal system. It's a bit like being in care. Once you get in that legal system, you've got meetings, you've got you know, maybe you're held in police custody. All of these things feel very similar to actually being in care. So it's almost like seeking out what a person has experienced within the care system, but without realizing how damaging it is for them as an individual. I hope that makes sense. I mean, one of the things that I did, I was lucky I didn't end up in prison, but I did end up working in social services for a very long time. So I reinstitutionalized myself as an employee in social services. I mean, how toxic is that? Terrible.
That was what you were used to. And that's what I was just about to go on to say. Did you say you also worked in the prisons as well?
I worked in police custody as an appropriate adult. So when people committed a crime, I would sit in on the interview and I would help them through that process to make sure the police were doing what it is they were meant to be doing.
I have a fascination with prison life, prisons. And I've often wondered why. We used to drive, me and my mum, when we were younger, we used to drive past a prison, and I always would ask if we could stop, and I think she was always like, no, we're not going to stop and go and see the prisoners. But I always had that, some really weird fascination with it. Now I wasn't institutionalized in a care or anything close to what you're talking about here, but I always wondered why, because I think I was always told I would end up in prison, or dead or in prison by the time I was 20. Thankfully, neither. Really sort of, I guess, another huge conversation, Denny.
Yeah, and for me, I think my time in the youth offending team really, really highlighted this, that we absolutely criminalise young people for their trauma responses. We criminalise young people, and then on the flip side to that, currently now, I can honestly say that when I report MISFAs, I get the response from the police probably 90% of the time that they're regular MISFAs, they're labelled as troublemakers, we've got more important things to do. And what we know, frontline, is that these young people are being exploited and are wrapped up in this world of crime because they seek attachment. You know, care homes are targeted for a reason. These are young people who don't have a sense of belonging, you know, have trauma responses. And we know that grooming and exploitation, it's gold dust for them. And within the youth offending team, I've touched on this before, that 95% of young offenders in my 10 years of working there had speech and language processing difficulties and were highly likely to be neurodivergent, trying to fit into a neurotypical world that was not acknowledged and was excluded from school. And so therefore, you know, sense of self is on the floor.
Well, I mean, huge, huge, huge. I think there's another few shows already we found out from today, from today's conversation, but we are coming up to the end of today's show. Before we come to Denny, who will do a summary of the show today, just want to do a shout out for Wendy. If you want to follow Wendy, go to her website, www.wendykier.com, and that's Kier, K-I-E-R. If you go on there, you'll find all her socials. Go and follow her, because she posts some wonderful things about where she lives as well. So if, like me, you like watching things like that, you'll find that beautiful as well. So that's WendyKier, K-I-E-R.com. You can also follow my panel. I will direct you to their Twitter handles, Chris Tuck_WWHF, and that stands for West Wickham Health and Fitness. And Chris does a lot in that area as well. So that's Chris Tuck_WWHF. You can find Denny at Denny Counselling on Twitter. Wendy's also there. If you go to her website, you'll find her there. And of course, you can find me, EJ Taylor UK. Today's show has been about trauma. If you are listening and you have felt drawn to this conversation or triggered in any way, do get in touch with me. I have a host of people I can signpost you onto and support you. And if you feel that you have any value to add to the work that we're doing here, want to join us as a guest, then please get in touch with me for that as well. We'd love to meet you. Okay, over to you, Denny. Thank you, Chris. Thank you, Wendy. Denny, let's summarise today's show.
Yeah, massive show. We knew it was going to be, didn't we? But I came across, I'm reading at the moment, a book from an animal behaviourist called Temple Grandin. And I came across this quote, and I think this wraps up an awful lot of what we've spoken about. So in the animal world, making fear memories permanent helps animals to survive in the wild. The one that forgets where they met the lion will not survive. Is it any wonder that many, many clients have a fear of letting go and losing that hypervigilance and losing those trauma responses? Because in many ways, we don't want to meet the lion. We're waiting for the lion. We remember how the lion impacted upon us. So in order for us to create a safe space for people to explore this, we need to give them safety. That's physical, psychological, emotional safety. Knowing you're safe enables you to ask for help. And freedom from threat and harm will only come when we feel that level of safety. Choice, it needs to be a shared decision making. We need to feel that we have a voice, and clients need to be listened to. People with lived experience need to be listened to. Transparency, trustworthiness. That means organisations, we've touched on this, medical organisations explaining what they're going to do and make sure our actions match our words and our policies. Collaboration, we need to feel that we're working alongside and actively involving clients. We're not doing to them, we're doing with them. Empowerment, validate feelings. Active listening is absolutely crucial, one of the most underrated elements of any therapeutic space that supports people to make decisions that are right for them. And then finally, I feel very strongly about this. We cannot eradicate the cultural considerations that need to go into any trauma-informed work that we have. And my greatest sentence that I like to say, and for me, I think it's crucial. Many people may not agree with this, but let's change our language. What has happened to this person? What does this person need? Rather than what is wrong with this person? If we can really change the language in how we're working, and I know we then come into that medical model as well, but what has happened to this person and what is it that they need?
Beautiful. Couldn't have said any of that better myself. Thank you, Denny. Great summary to a very truly dynamic show, really. And something you were saying there. Sometimes for me, acceptance without judgment is just enough. Which is what Denny has sort of said with everything that she was just saying there. So look, we're literally at the end of the show. And I can't thank Wendy enough for coming on to share with us her work. Obviously, you know, born out of the very difficult childhood you'd had, but you've taken that and turned it into such a positive area to help so many other people. So thank you, Wendy, for doing that. It's been great to see you. That's www.wendykia.com. And thank you to my panel, to Chris. Chris is at Chris_Tuck, WWHF on Twitter. Denny, thank you to Denny, our resident therapist, who is at Denny, DENI, counselling. It's been great to see everybody here today talking very openly about a very difficult conversation. So thank you. Thank you also to everyone behind the scenes, to Johan, to UK Health Radio, to Christine, to the panel, to the guests and everyone else who puts a lot of time and effort and work into making these shows happen, because without which we wouldn't be able to produce the continued silence. And we're so grateful that we can. I will see you next time with Denny and Chris. Until then, stay safe and well. Thank you.